Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the backyard. This is Margaret, and you're listening to Backyard Labrish. I want to welcome our listeners, both calling in and online tonight. Of course, I'm sure that for you on the list, you know that we are doing a tour, an island tour, of our beautiful homeland, Jamaica. And I'm sure a lot of Jamaicans will agree with me, although we all are from a very small island. There's a lot we don't know about each individual parish. So for the next few weeks, we're going to be giving some highlights. Of course, we can never, ever cover everything, because although we are a small island, we are so rich in history about our culture and our past and your customs. It would take forever in just one parish. So we're doing little highlights and perhaps having our listeners find out something that they might not have known before, and giving you all a chance to reminisce if you're from that side of the island, or if you have a friend or relative that might have shared something with you. Of course, we'd love for you to join us and share, but if you just want to listen in and learn and remember, we welcome you. So again, this is Margaret, and I'm going to start because last week we did Kingston, which is a parish and also its own capital. I remember in school we always say Kingston, capital, Kingston, St. Thomas, capital. Oh, dear. Anybody know? Marante. So we're going to be talking about St. Thomas this evening. And for you from St. Thomas, we welcome you if you're a listener. And for those coming by later on, we hope that you will have some nice memories. This will trigger some memories about your homeland. So I want for our listeners who might not be Jamaicans, because of course we welcome everyone that loves culture, and especially if you love Jamaican culture. So I'd like to tell you that St. Thomas is on the southern tip, southeast of actually Jamaica. It's southeast of Kingston, and it's in the county of Surrey. Remember last week I spoke about the island being divided into three, call them counties, I suppose is what you would call it. But St. Thomas is very important, and especially Marante. And all Jamaicans, I think, are familiar with the Murat Bey Rebellion, but I want to just tell you something a little about that parish geographically first. And I learned a couple of things that I never knew before, although I was born and raised in Kingston, and St. Thomas is the first parish that you visit if you go south away from Kingston. And I remember going there quite often because it was just close by. So first of all, it is situated on the southeastern end of Jamaica, and it's the birthplace of a very, very important person, and that is Paul Vogel. He was born in St. Thomas and was the one who helped to have a lot of the freedoms that were enjoyed, you know, in those days that had to be demanded, really, the rights of people. So we're going to talk a little bit about him and also about some of the things that St. Thomas is famous for. So let me just tell you what I learned is that, first of all, that particular parish was named, you know, they're always named after someone who's there originally. So this is just what they think because there's no documentation. And I must say that's why we want to document our stuff with the technology that we have now. So let me just go backwards and tell you that the whole idea behind Backyard Labrish is for especially people from my generation, which would be people growing up in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, pre-independence, who have special memories of growing up on our beautiful island, that they leave some of these living memories with us on the radio or at our website at backyardlabrish.com, because we are establishing a community so we can leave our own stories. Anyway, back to St. Thomas. It is believed that it was named after Thomas Lord Windsor, who was the governor of Jamaica in 1662. So that's the first thing I wanted to share with you. I didn't know, not that it matters, but it's always interesting to know how a name originally came up. So let me tell you a little bit more. And I noticed that we have some callers, and I want to remind you that if you'd like to interact with me, please just hit 1 on your telephone, and I'll see a raised hand, and I'll be happy to plug you in so you'll be live. So let me know now. I'm watching you. But if you just want to relax and listen, please feel free to do so. But St. Thomas was densely populated by the Arawak Indians when Christopher Columbus first discovered it, which was in 1494. Now, the Spaniards established cattle ranches at other British colonies. And were invited to settle here, about 1,600 colonists, mainly from Nevis, including the governor of Nevis and his wife and children, settled in St. Thomas. However, in a short time, 2/3 of them died of fevers. Now, in 1674, a French admiral sailed from Santo Domingo and landed at Murat Bey, and after a month, he fought havoc with the settlers there, killing many and carrying off their slaves. So the British people, occupied it, I suppose, with their slaves, and then he came along and landed his ship and just raised havoc, as they said, and took away their people. However, later, bands of Maroons settled in the mountains. It's very mountainous. St. Thomas is very mountainous. So the Maroons settled there, and they were joined by other Maroons. They joined up with other Maroons in Portland and other places. So now we get on to a little further down to the Morant Bay Rebellion, which I don't know about our listeners, but we knew about it in school, but I mean, there was not really, I cannot remember a lot of details. However, if my listeners remember, I'm a senior, so I think I'm getting those senior moments because some of this information seems so fresh and spicy to me as if I never heard it before. Well, honestly, I know about the Morant Bay Rebellion, but there are little details that I'm just digging up that just seems to be very intriguing to me. Anyway, the ex-slaves all over Jamaica were discontented with the injustices being melted out to them, particularly on the question of land ownership. So Paul Bogle led a delegation of small farmers. They walked 45 miles to present their grievances to the governor, the then governor, in Spanish Town, which was then the capital of Jamaica, not Kingston as it is now. And they were denied an audience. Paul and his followers, armed with sticks and machetes, went to the courthouse where they were having a meeting. And, of course, they read them the Riot Act. Now I know where that came from. When people used to say, you know, he read me the Riot Act. Well, they were read the Riot Act and was virtually ignored. Nobody wanted to hear what they had to say. Now, remember, they were all very peaceful. Now, a few people began to throw stones at the volunteers who fired into the crowd, killing several people. Later, the mob reorganized and returned, setting fire to the courthouse and nearby buildings. Now, the people who were inside the meetings couldn't get out, because when they tried to leave the burning building, you know, they were either killed by the fire or by the mob. So that was more or less a synopsis of what went on when Paul led the delegation peacefully to get his, you know, story heard. Now, eventually, George William Gordon, who, of course, was an Englishman, he was in touch with Paul Bogle, and he personally tried to improve the lot of the workers by speaking out at the House of Assembly. I'm bringing this point up because, you know, no matter how far you go back, regardless of the disputes between whether it's one nation, one race, or another, there's always one person from that nation or race who is able to see through the fact that an injustice is an injustice, and at least it should be looked at. And I'm hinting now at the idea that if there is an enemy or what you perceive to be an enemy, you don't even want to talk to them. You don't want to hear their side. You don't want to listen to what they have to say. But as far back as we can go in history, there was always one person on either side or any side that said, wait a minute, you know, at least we need to listen and check out what the other side is doing. So some of our listeners, this is never a political platform, but, you know, I'm just hinting that we know that there's talk going on with what is supposed to be our enemy, and some people are very upset about it. But, you know, historically, men of honor always was on the side of justice, and always on the side of listening and making some sort of action towards understanding, because a lot of times misunderstandings can be settled if you just talk and if the other person listens. So, okay, enough of that. So I want again to welcome our listeners. The board is lighting up. I see people from 631, and 718 and 770. So I want to welcome you all to the backyard. You're listening to Margaret, and we're talking about St. Thomas, and in particular, the Morant Bay Rebellion. So when Jamaica became independent, of course, Paul Bogle, George William Gordon, as well as some of our other political leaders, were made national heroes. But I want to finish the story. Now, William Gordon was taken by boat to Morant Bay, where he was tried for conspiracy and hanged. Now, the following day, this I found very interesting, Bogle was captured by the Maroons. The Maroons captured him and handed him over, and he was hanged. Now, if some of our listeners remember, the Maroons were the freed slaves, you know, who fled and occupied different parts. But it's interesting how, you know, things go. And I just thought that was very interesting. I might have heard it before, but for somehow it seemed very interesting at this point. Now, over 430 people were killed or executed by soldiers in the rebellion, and over 1,000 houses were burned to the ground. Now, that's what happened. That's why Morant Bay is so, not only why, but it's a very famous city politically. Now, I want to just talk about something else that I found very interesting about St. Thomas on the whole. First of all, some of our listeners might know, as well as they may not, the important cities in St. Thomas are Port Antonio, Yalas, Bath. I didn't even know Bath was a city. I thought it was just the name of the place that had the mineral springs. There's Seaforth, Golden Grove. I remember hearing that. I remember a lot of times hearing about Golden Grove. But I found something very interesting about the rivers in St. Thomas, because they have three rivers, the main ones, I'm sure. Yalas River, the Plantain Garden River, is the only river in Jamaica that flows eastward. Now, I didn't know that all the rivers flow in one direction, but apparently it's so. And for the people who are in geography, I suppose that would make sense to them. But it mentioned here in my research that the three main rivers in the parish are Yalas, Plantain Garden River, which is the only river on the island that flows eastward. And I am wondering if it has anything to do with what we're going to discuss next, which is about the mineral springs. But let me first tell you that the agriculture plays a very important part of the economy in St. Thomas. And their main agriculture is sugar and bananas. Now, I remember as I grew up in Jamaica, a lot of bananas came from St. Thomas. First of all, it was close to Kingston. So when you went to the marketplace, you know, they had a lot of bananas from St. Thomas. However, I hope one of my listeners that's calling in can help me on this. But I remember as a young person learning that there were two different kinds of bananas. One was Gros Michel, and the other one was Lacaton. I'm sure that's the name. It's not mentioned in the research that I see what kind of bananas came from St. Thomas. But I remember that one kind of the banana is sort of long and thin. I don't know if that's the Lacaton. And the other one is sort of a little stouter, you know, meatier or bigger. And one is supposed to be really soft when you cook it, and the other one is, you know, they're both soft, but this particular one, and I think it's Gros Michel. But I'm just curious to know if my memory serves me right. I am hoping that one of my listeners will put up their hand and let me know what is correct, and especially if you're St. Thomas or from St. Thomas, or if you have friends or stories about St. Thomas. I definitely want to cue you in and let you share your so you can share your stories with the rest of our listeners. So let me just tell you now that There are other things going on in St. Thomas, of course. They have a lot of food processing that go on there, and they are involved in electrical equipment, it says here. And there are over 10,000 people that are benefiting from a special program, which is called upliftmentjamaica.org, because they're involved in creating and supporting the opportunities for the people of St. Thomas. So it's always good to know that there are organizations that are helping particularly some parts of the island that might be a little overlooked, or they're underfunded, or, you know, they don't really have the amount of help that they really need. So let's now talk about something that St. Thomas is very famous for. And I remember while I was there, it would be a special place to go. And that is the Mineral Bath. Now, I didn't even know that there was a whole city or town called Bath. I thought it was just a bath, you know, where you go to get healed or get relaxed, or would be like an exotic spa or similar to an exotic spa that you have here. Not necessarily in the ambience, but in the quality of the minerals in the water that you would bathe in. But let me tell you how far back this goes. And I got this from someone that was blogging about mineral springs, and I thought it was very, very interesting. Anyway, this person wrote that they were, it's apparently a foreigner, and they say they were researching mineral springs when they came across a book that was published in 1891. And actually, it was by a doctor. And it says here, The Mineral Springs of Jamaica, by the Honorable J.C. Filippo, M.D., first published for the Jamaica Exhibition of 1891. And I think for our listeners that was listening over the Jamaica History Month, I talked about the Jamaicans who sponsored and supported a wonderful exhibition that was visited by people from all over the world that I think is very little known to Jamaicans of my era, anyhow. In 1891, they had this huge, it was huge then, world exhibition, and people came from all over. Now, remember that those times we didn't have airplanes. The people were coming by boats. And it was very successful. And it was put on by some of the famous names that are still around in the form of business. And we spoke a little bit about that when we did our History Month series. So now this book was published for that exhibition by this doctor. And this person is saying that they picked it up from the shelves of a second-hand bookstore, just by chance. And as he turned the pages, they began to crumble. And I want to just say that to say, there is so much history about our country and our people that is being obliterated. First of all, the museums and the historical society in Jamaica, I read that they have some written material that is so fragile that it cannot even be copied, you know, photostatically like we do, just putting it on a copy machine and copy it because it is so fragile. So one of the things I would like to do in the future is perhaps have some way of for our listeners and web community to think about perhaps coming up with some ideas of how we could help to preserve some of these things that are so important to people just knowing about all the wonderful history and different ways that Jamaica and Jamaicans have contributed to different disciplines all over the world. So this was a doctor who apparently did some research and wrote a book for the exhibition. Now, this person who picked up this book said it was almost crumbling, you know, so they even had difficulties reading it. But it spoke about, and in those days, they sort of wrote in old English, and some of our listeners might know what I'm talking about. You know, their English was not the same as we learned, or even the English being spoken now. But this part of it said, to invalids shut up during the long winter of the north by gout, rheumatism, bronchitis, and consumption, which we know as TB, Dr. Filippo enthusiastically praised the waters of especially Bath for people with any of those symptoms or, you know, problems to come to Jamaica and dip in those waters, because he was very sure that they would get some relief from any of these things that was bothering them. So I see a raised hand from 631-676, and I would like to invite them to join the Labridge. So I'm going to be opening up the mic in a minute. Good evening, this is Margaret from Backyard Labridge. Who do I have? Hello? Yvonne? 676, you're on. Do you want to talk to us on Backyard Labridge? Sorry, I'm unable to hear you. There's a lot of background noise. This is Margaret from Backyard Labridge. You're on the radio. 631-676. Are you there? Well, apparently you did not mean to raise your hand. If you do, you can let me know again. Are you there, 631?
But I didn't touch it.
Oh, you didn't touch it? All right, well, welcome, and you can go back to listening.
You're on Backyard Labish?
I'm on Backyard Labish, and you're live on the radio. Would you like to tell me your name?
Chicken here.
And where are you calling from?
Chicken here, the conversation. She's on Backyard Labish. Just think it's dangerous. And she's hearing.
I'm hearing you because you raised your hand and I opened up the mic. You want to tell me where you're calling from?
Hello?
Hello, good evening. You're talking to Margaret on Backyard Labridge and you're live on the way.
Put it on mute, I'll hear you.
All right, I'm going to mute you then. Welcome to the Backyard, and thank you for calling in, and you can continue to listen. You're muted. Okay, I see another raised hand, 718-654. Good evening, you're in Backyard Labridge. Let's see. Hello, are you there?
Hi, Ms. Marshall, this is Sharon.
Good evening, Sharon, and welcome to the Backyard. Are you in your easy chair?
I am sitting in my backyard getting ready to labrish.
Wonderful. Well, welcome to the labrish.
Thank you. I spoke to my mom, and she confirmed what you said about the bananas. It was the Lacatan and the Gros Michel bananas that were grown in St. Thomas.
Oh, wonderful. I thought I remember that from I was growing up.
Yes.
Now, did she know which one was more tender?
Not too sure.
Oh, okay.
My uncle who had a banana farm, or I'm not
plantation.
Sure what you would call it, plantation,
uh-huh.
He would have known. Unfortunately, he's no longer with us. He passed
away. I'm so glad that your mother was able to share that, because, you know, this is what we're talking about. People that have just some, you know, spicy little information about little things that are really, can be important.
Right.
To many,
I'm
many
hoping that she'll be joining us shortly.
Oh, good. I really am happy to hear that.
But I'm loving what the talk this evening, because, you know, Morant Bay, St. Thomas, is my adopted parish.
Oh, really?
Yes, and that's where I'm going to be living. That's
Big
where I'm going to be living.
Oh, that's where you're going to be living. What part?
Actually, right in Morant Bay.
Oh, that is wonderful. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Yes, but I found some interesting information about the Bath. Now, did you know that Bath was a town?
Yes.
Or I think it's a city within
it's within
the parish.
It's a district within the parish.
Right, right. Okay, well, I sort of was just, because I'm a Kingstonian, I thought Bath was just the place you went.
No, no, there's actually a district called Bath. And
uh-huh.
it's so funny because I was there in February and I actually went to Bath Fountain and I went to the Botanical Gardens there at Bath,
uh-huh.
which is they're doing a lot of good work there. And Bath is just a really very nice town. There's a very quaint church, which is right in front of the Botanical Gardens. Very English looking.
Oh,
that goes with the name.
English background.
Yes, yes.
But
so I guess,
were you familiar with this exhibition in 1891? I mean, did you know about it?
No, I didn't.
Okay,
that's
well,
why I'm
you know,
to you.
this doctor is the one, he published the book for that exhibition. And that book was all about Bath. Now, I'm sure the book is not still in publication, but if you ever, you know, I need to perhaps research and see if there's anyone that has one. But it's interesting because, as I mentioned, it's a foreigner. I was reading just blogs. You know, I just go from one thing to another when I'm doing my research.
Mm-hmm.
So, like Dr. Joy Lumsden, if I see anyone that wrote anything about anything close to what I'm doing, then I go off to research them.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a tourist who eventually went to Jamaica mostly because of the, you know, what all they read about in that ancient book. This book was published in 1891. And it talked about that this particular doctor knew of research that was done by the scientists of those times. He relates how Sir Hans Sloane, the founder of the British Museum, speaks in his introduction to the history of Jamaica, published in 1707. So,
my goodness.
So Sloane published a book in 1707 that dealt with Jamaica. Isn't that something?
Wow.
And in Sloane's book, he spoke about a hot bath or spring near Morant, situated
mm-hmm.
in a wood, that's exactly what it says, which
mm-hmm.
has been bathed in and drunk of late years for the belly ache with great success. You know, that's
wow.
how they wrote then.
Wow.
Which sometimes don't even make sense, but you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
here it is, in 1707, this Sloane was writing, and he was the founder of the British Museum, the man writing that book. So Filippo, the doctor, was referring to Sloane's book of 1707 in his book of 1891. Isn't that something?
Amazing.
He reveals also the aspirations of the educated landowners and their desire to have a spa like the famous ones in Europe.
Hmm.
There are states and principalities in Europe that have been kept in a state of solvency by revenues derived from their springs, he says. This is what this person, Sloane, was saying.
Hmm.
And he wanted to have people aware of the possibilities of developing that spa in Bath to compete with the spas in Belgium and Switzerland.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine that?
Wow.
This is in 1707.
Yeah, yeah. Because I guess in those days it was popular to have almost like homeopathic remedies, and
uh-huh.
people would take to the waters.
Uh-huh.
So they would go to
yeah.
Bath in England, they would go to Baden-Baden, I think in Switzerland, and these other places which were, the baths were like a throwback from the Roman times.
Right, exactly so. But listen to this. This man Sloan's book contained the first and probably the only really detailed analysis of the waters.
Mm.
As he was, remember, he's the founder of the British Museum that was writing that book. So he had the water in Bath analyzed. And you would be surprised what they found. They found that that particular water had more sulfurs and different things. You know, they have the consistencies and all of that here
mm-hmm.
that no other spa has. They have some of them, but not all of them.
Okay.
Isn't that something?
Mm-hmm.
He says here, the most striking thinking about Dr. Filippo's narrative is his basic sense of bemusement. Having discovered it had had world-beating natural spa, and not just one sort, every sort, all packaged in a small island paradise. Jamaica
right.
had failed to capitalize on that spa. Isn't that something? At every turn, Filippo is forced to lament. This is the doctor now. Lament the state of repair of the resources he's describing. So even in those days, he felt that they were not... People are not paying enough attention
yeah.
to the fact that this is someplace special and should have as much recognition as what was going on in Belgium and Switzerland at the time
mm-hmm.
than because he, in his estimation, based on
the slow
driving, it was better.
Yeah,
isn't that
yeah.
something?
Yeah, and I think it's still true today, even today.
Right, that's what I was about to say. Even then, there were people saying, you know, how could you have this precious gift of nature and not really capitalize on it? I just can't figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying the same thing now, because I never really knew that it was so special.
Right. I'm kind of remembering a story that I heard some time ago when there was a slave back in the day who had been beaten by his master. And I think he came across Bath by accident.
Mm.
And he was washing himself in the pool.
Right.
And he was amazed the next day that the welts and the cuts, they
wow.
healed.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's had mystical kind of properties from those, you know, from that time.
Right, definitely. And they have a list here, you know, of Dr. Filippo's report. He had something done by the Moors of London, had analyzed the water, revealing the, and they have a list of all the chemicals that were found in that particular bath, mineral spring in Bath, I mean. And that the temperature, another thing is that the temperature of that particular part, you know, the water there, as opposed to Milk River and the other mineral springs that we have in Jamaica, which I'll talk about when we do that particular parish. However,
yeah.
this is, Bath has the most unique amount of minerals. They mentioned, you know, a whole lot of different ones that are found in different minerals in different parts of the world. But according to this report that was done then, there is no other mineral springs that have this combination along with the natural heat that of the water. You know, it's two things going on simultaneously. It has more chemicals, you know, natural minerals, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
And it also gets hotter than anywhere else.
Yeah, I think it has something to do with the fact that there's some dormant volcano or something. Someone mentioned it to me some time ago in passing and in a joke.
Right.
Did they know that Bath was sitting on top of a volcano?
Well, it's possibly that's the truth, you know.
Yeah.
So I was just very, very intrigued, you know, by this. And I am hoping that perhaps, you know, someone in the younger generation will take
utilize
up the torch,
yeah,
and realize that, you know, that is something very special that could not only do a lot from the island from a tourist point of view, but from a healing point of view.
Yeah, or even medical tourism.
Right, right. This is what I mean. I think that it's being run by the government now, isn't it?
I'm not too sure. I'd have to find out because, coincidentally, a cousin of mine has just built a guest house at the foot of the road, the path that leads up to the Bath Fountain. So I guess there is talk of some resurgence and money being put into the eastern side of the island. But with the economic downturn, I'm not sure whether those plans are still on track.
Right,
to develop
right.
The eastern side of the island in terms of tourism.
Right.
So
well,
I'm sure that
you know, like what's happening in any other part of the world, a lot of the natural resources, the parks and, you know, things like that, are perhaps going to be the last thing funded right now.
But that doesn't stop the community from coming together.
Right,
and having,
right.
Having,
I mean,
showing interest.
Right.
In
I am hoping
that, will benefit
that our listeners that are online and also on their computers, whether they're from Jamaica or not, we'll just start spreading the word of how very special that particular mineral spring is and encourage people to go from a healing standpoint, you know, and I hope that Jamaicans themselves will start visiting the facility more and perhaps helping to promote it, you know, in some way that more people can get benefited from it, number one, and there'll be more revenue to try and preserve, you know, the surroundings. I don't think you can do anything to the actual where it comes out of the rock in terms of it's always flowing. But of course you have to maintain, you know, the access to the water itself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Make sure that people are safe and at least make it attractive.
Exactly, and easily accessible.
Right, that's right, with roads and things like that.
Right.
I'm using this platform to encourage our boards. The board is lighting up. There are several people that are listening in, and I want to again encourage. I want to thank you, Sharon, for joining me and sharing your mom's story about the bananas, because I remember that there were two kinds. And I just want to mention to some of our Jamaican listeners, you know, we take so many things for granted. I remember a couple of years ago, one of my girlfriends was a teacher. She's retired now, and it was Black History Month. And I always try to do something for the schools during Black History Month and tell them a little bit about our Black history. So one particular day, you know, everybody knows ripe bananas. You know, and I remember I went on a cruise and I decided to become a tourist and go on the bus with the tourists to the to Duns River Falls. And I remember this woman, you know, you go on a bus and you come back and you get on your bus. And I remember this woman coming on with like five plantains, you know, plantains. And I remember her husband saying, "My God, look at those giant bananas." And she said, "Yes, I can't wait to eat them. Can you, did you ever see such a big banana?" And it hit me that people, and that's what I did for my talk at the school that day. I took a banana and a plantain. And I asked anybody if they knew what the difference was. And they said, "No, that's a big banana." So I explained to them that the banana can be eaten both ripe and green when it's cooked.
Mm-hmm.
But the plantain cannot be eaten when it's ripe.
No, it has
unless
to be
you cook it.
Yes.
And their eyes just got wide open, you know, because the figure, if you can eat
the
right banana, you can eat. I don't know what happened to that woman when she tried to eat the plantain, but it was a banana, you know. But apparently whoever was selling it to her was just happy to sell it, her ripe plantains. I'm sure it was one of the natives. She wasn't going to be bothered to tell her she has to cook it unless she asked. You know, which I'm sure she didn't, because she came on the bus raving about these big bananas.
Right.
But anyhow, it's the only thing we have that it's one of the from that species that we eat both ripe and green, as I told them. However, in both cases, we have to cook the planted green, or we have to cook it ripe.
Right.
Of course, a lot of them were quite intrigued that we ate green bananas cooked.
Right.
You know, because
and
a lot of
ripe bananas.
Yes.
I have a quick story to tell about someone in England who saw somebody buying bananas and wanted to know what it was. So she was told what it was and how to prepare it. So this woman went off and boiled her bananas, came back into the office the next day and said, "Oh, the bananas were really, really nice, but I found the skin a little bit tough."
So she just put it in a pot.
Right.
Oh,
She ate the banana and the skin, too.
Right, that's what I mean.
I guess no one explained to her, don't eat the skin.
Right. But in the old days, I remember, they used to cook bananas, and then they take
the water.
Call it the pot water.
Yes.
And all
because
that's the most source of iron.
The most source of iron.
Right. It was so interesting. Anyway, Sharon, what is your 718-798? Are you 798?
No, that's my mom.
Oh, hi. I'm going to open up the mic to her.
You can mute me now.
Hi, Mom.
How are you?
I'm great. Welcome to the backyard. I have your daughter on the other line.
Yes, I'm listening.
Okay. Well, welcome to the backyard. We're discussing bananas and Bath and St. Thomas is our tour. We're touring St. Thomas this week. You know, we're doing an island tour. So what parish are you from?
Morant Bay.
Oh, you're from Morant Bay?
Yes, in St. Thomas.
Oh, my goodness, I didn't know that. I mean, I was just led to pick St. Thomas this week.
Wow.
And here are some of my friends are from Morant Bay. That is wonderful.
And you were right about the bananas, and the Gros Michel is the softest of
them. Oh, yes, I sort of think so. Even the word lacaton sounds tough, doesn't it?
Oh, I made a mistake. It's the
Lacaton
that's the softest of the two.
Oh, it's Lacaton that's soft? Oh, well, I take that back. So Gros Michel is the harder one. Oh, yes, Gros. Yeah, that's heavy. Oh, so now I know. Now, are they different shape?
No, they're the same. One is bigger than the other.
I thought that the Lacaton was sort of skinny.
Yes.
And the other one was sort of fat.
Gros Michel, yes.
Oh, so the fat one is the soft one.
Yes.
Okay. Now, in your days, did you cook the banana in the skin?
No.
You didn't?
No.
Okay. Do you do that now?
Well, yes, I do now. We don't peel bananas anymore.
Oh, yes, we don't.
Some of us do.
Okay. So here's the question now. I know in the old days,
yes.
When they used to drink the pot water for soup,
yes, I know.
They cooked the banana skin then? I don't remember.
No, I don't think they used to cook it in the skin then. They used to be peeled.
Oh, yes, I know they were always peeled. But I don't remember where the pot water came from. Do you remember hearing that word?
Yes, the pot water comes from when you cook all the provisions in it.
Oh, I see. I thought it had something to do with the banana.
Instead of making a soup as such, one would have a cup of that.
Mm-hmm. You just season it up and drink that. Ah, I got you. You know, it just goes to show how we made use of everything.
Yes, we certainly did.
And now the dietitians and people that are talking about controlling your weight are saying how good it is to have some soup,
yes,
even before your meal, because number one, you don't eat as much. And number one, it releases some of the enzymes that your stomach need for digestion.
Exactly.
And I said, God, you know, all older people were very smart, intuitively. You know, and I don't know if they were taught. They might have been taught by the ancestors. But I remember when I was growing up as a child, we had soup almost every day before we had our dinner.
Yes.
And it was different kinds of soup. And I said, boy, were they smart. No wonder in my day, we never really had, I can't remember a lot of overweight people.
No.
Can you? And now, even now in Jamaica, you know, weight is becoming a problem. Not as much as here, however. But I try to remember, you know, things of when I was growing up, what it was like. But I'm so glad that you could fill me in on the two kinds of banana, because I think a lot of our younger people might not know that we have two different species of banana or whatever you call them, two different kinds.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be interesting to know if the tree looks different. Do you know that?
They're the same.
The tree looks the same.
Yes.
Ah, so you would just know it, the kind of banana, by perhaps the shape.
Yes, by seeing texture fruits.
Got you. Now, do you purchase green banana here?
Yes, I do.
Okay, do you find a difference? Do you ever buy the skinny one and notice if it's softer than the fat one?
Not really.
They're the same.
Not in my opinion.
I was going to say we don't get Jamaican bananas here, Miss Marshall.
Right. Well, I'm just thinking that
we get Chiquita bananas.
Beg your pardon?
We only get Chiquita bananas.
Oh, and that's going where?
That's from I think
Mexico.
But
I'm wondering if they would have the same different, you know, the different kinds of bananas there. Because
no,
I don't think so.
I don't even know if Lacatan and Gros Michel are still grown in Jamaica now.
Oh, really?
I'm not sure.
Huh. Well, but bananas don't grow from a seed, does it?
No, not from a seed.
It grows from a sucker.
Yes.
Ah, okay. So it's just one reproducing another, that kind of one going into two, and then the big one die and the little ones live.
Exactly. They transplant.
Right. Okay, so I can't see how they would annihilate a species then. I don't see how it could get rid of itself. So it perhaps
hurricanes.
From the...
Oh, yes.
And the blights, the blights that affected the bananas.
I see.
And pesticides, overuse of pesticide.
Oh, yes, definitely. And that's why people really don't want to cook banana in the skin too much. That's what I think about. You know, all the things that might be sprayed on it.
That's what it
seems. Before it gets to us.
Yeah.
So I'm a little leery. And so I peel mine. You know, I really do. But I know that there are some people who cook it in the skin.
Especially when you're making goat head soup.
Beg your pardon?
Especially when you're making goat head soup.
Goat head. Oh, yes. I haven't learned to do that yet. Perhaps you have to have me over when you're having some.
We certainly will.
Okay. Well, I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in to the St. Thomas story. We're discussing St. Thomas, which is at the east of Kingston, and we have one person who born and raised in St. Thomas, Mom? Were you?
Actually, I was born in Portland.
Okay, which is bordering St. Thomas?
Yes.
Okay, because that's the next.
I went to St. Thomas, Morant Bay, when I was like 5 years old.
Uh-huh.
And that's where I remained until I was 15.
Right.
Then I went to London.
Oh, so you didn't even go to Kingston. You went directly to London.
Yes.
Uh-huh. That's interesting. Now, I wanted to ask you one question. When you were growing up in St. Thomas, what other parish did you visit?
I visited Manchester.
Uh-huh.
And? Kingston also, but to know the other parishes, I'm not very good at that.
Because I felt the same way, you know, and I think most Jamaicans, not all of them, But most Jamaicans will visit one or two parishes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, perhaps where a parent is from,
mm-hmm.
and you have two parents, so perhaps where your father is from or where your mother is from.
Yeah.
But that was
Portland.
Right. Hardly anyone know the whole island. Now, because Jamaica is so small, most foreigners believe that we know all the other parishes and that we all do the same things. We prepare our meals the same way. And that's not so when I was growing up.
No, it's not.
I went to Savlamar because that's where my mother was from. And I loved the country, really. I really loved the country. And my father was a minister, so he sort of traveled around to different places. So I visited other places, but not from the point of view where you go and spend a week or 2 weeks or your summer vacation like I did from the place where my mother was from.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I thought it would be interesting to do a tour, even though, you know, we're supposed to know all the parishes. But there's a lot of things I don't know about any place else. I know quite a bit about Savlamar. And when I'm doing Westmoreland, I'm sure you'll find so many things that you perhaps never heard of.
Right.
But even sayings and even the way they prepare food
is sometimes different. Yeah.
You know, I remember visiting some place in St. Elizabeth, and I am hoping that when I'm doing St. Elizabeth, there'll be somebody to fill me in because I have a clear picture of how they prepared a particular meal with peas. And I am hoping someone can call in, and just like you did with the Ghost Mitchell and Lakaton bananas, and it made me feel so good because I said, I'm not cracking. I know I remember that. And then I asked other people, you ever heard of that? I said, what? You know, so. And one of the reasons I think that surfaced with me is because I happened to have a member of my family that was a politician in St. Thomas. So, you know,
who was that?
She was with the People's National Party. I'm trying to remember what her married name was. She was a Tate before she got married. Thompson, Vi Thompson. Vi Thompson. I will look her up in the history when I should have.
Okay.
But she married someone from St. Thomas who, like your uncle, had a banana plantation. But she was with the People's National Party under Norman Washington Manley.
Okay.
Yeah. So she was very active at that time when I was growing up in the 50s, you know. She was very active in the 50s in the party. So so she would bring, you know, bananas to Kingston when she came to visit us.
Right.
And she would, because her husband had a plantation, she would explain to me about the different bananas. And I know I remember that, but I've asked other people about, for instance, my cousin, who's always a fan and a listener, if he knew about the different bananas, and before I was getting on the show, and he said, no, never heard of Lakaton and Gros Michel. Don't know what I'm talking about. So I'm hoping that all the listeners on our board has lit up. We've got a lot of people listening. And again, I want to invite you to hit one on your keyboard if you'd like to say hi to the world or say hi to me and the rest of my guests that are lavishing about St. Thomas, a very historic. Did you realize how historic your parish was?
Yes.
Growing up?
Yes, because I did actually live in St. Thomas in Morant Bay for a while.
Uh-huh.
I went to school there for a while.
Yes.
I actually attended Morant Bay High School.
Oh, you did.
I was aware of the history with Paul Bogle.
You did. Uh-huh.
And I actually wrote a piece of, called Dumfries, which is another district in St. Thomas, just outside of Morant Bay town, where I actually lived for a while.
Oh,
it's just so coincidental that you would choose St. Thomas as your second stop
in
the journey around Jamaica.
And I knew nothing about your connection.
No, no.
But But you know, we are all connected in some way. And when people of like minds get together,
the thoughts will flow together.
Oh, yes. And that is why I'm encouraging our listeners to invite their friends to come and hang out with us for an hour or so on a Wednesday evening. We're here every Wednesday. And it's just a relaxed platform. And we invite you to participate with us. Not only on our radio show, but we ask you to visit our website, www.backyardlabbers.com, and become part of the community. And I want to tell our listeners before I go, and you, Sharon, and Mom, that this weekend I'm really celebrating. It's my birthday celebration weekend, even though I had a birthday earlier in the year, in March. I'm celebrating my 74th birthday.
Oh, happy birthday. Belated happy birthday.
Yeah, thank
you. You kept that very quiet, I think.
Yes, yes, yes. So when I tell my listeners that I'm a senior's senior, that is the truth. But I do have a passion for life and a passion for history and a passion for my culture. So I thank you for your support.
And enjoy your celebration.
Have a wonderful celebration this
weekend.
Thank
you. And I'm doing it real island style.
Oh my.
I have family and friends coming in, and we're starting our celebration from tomorrow. I'm having a picture party tomorrow where people are bringing old pictures, and we're going to be talking about all our old stuff we used to do in those ridiculous-looking clothes and what we used to wear.
And make sure you put them up on the website.
Oh, yeah. That's a good idea. You know, I'm not very technical, but I'm getting there. And then on Friday night, we're having a Western party. We're going to learn to do the line dance.
The line
dancing. We're expanding our mind. We're getting old, but we're expanding our mind. We're going to learn to do the whatever they do on, you know, they jump over here and do over there. And because we know how to swing our hips and do the calypso and the reggae, you know, we just need to learn something else.
Different, yeah.
And then on Saturday night, we're having a formal affair, a black and white affair.
Oh,
and
excuse me.
I hope none of my children are listening, but guess what this old lady's going to do, listeners?
Go ahead.
I'm going to do a Tina Turner lip sync. If you see me on YouTube, don't be surprised.
Yeah, someone has to video that, definitely.
Oh, my God.
I'm practicing
a song, and I'm practicing my steps, and I'm
going
to do my thing. This old lady is
going
to do her thing.
Oh,
my goodness.
Are you going to do the cha-cha slide?
Beg your pardon?
Are you going to be doing the cha-cha slide?
Yes, we're going to be doing everything. We rented the Georgia Tech ballroom, and we're going to be dancing all over the floor.
My goodness. Is Donna going to be there?
Yes, Donna is going to be there.
Excellent. So she'll
be there. And then on Sunday morning, I'm having breakfast at my house. So it's a whole weekend.
That's wonderful.
And I just want to tell my listeners that if I'm still on the planet, I'm expanding this in as I get older into a family and friends affair, and everybody's going to be coming down to Atlanta.
Good for you. Yes, definitely.
I hope. We're going to have a whole weekend.
That would be wonderful.
Right.
We're sorry I'm not going to be there to share it with you, but we will be there in spirit, and we're wishing you a wonderful, wonderful weekend.
Well, thank you so much. And I want to take the opportunity to ask our callers online to invite their friends, especially their older friends, to just come. You know, if you can set up your computer for them and just click on the website of the show and just let them sit and listen to it. If they don't want to be on the telephone or if they want to share with us, they can give you their stories and you can share it with the rest of the world, because we all have something to contribute. About
go, Miss Marshall. I have my cousin here who would like to say hello.
Oh, well, come on up. Please do. Welcome to the show. This is Margaret. Who am I speaking with?
Hello, Miss Marshall. You're speaking with Ivy Hamilton.
Hi, Ivy Hamilton. That's a famous name.
Yeah,
what parish are you from?
Portland.
Oh, you're from Portland. That's going to be my next parish.
Oh, yes?
Yes, because it's connected to St. Thomas.
What do you know about Portland?
Nothing. I went there on my honeymoon, I went to someplace, a hotel on the beach for my honeymoon in 1957.
Oh.
Isn't that something?
That's
the only time I went there. And no, I think I went when I was a kid to a camp. Is there a place called Titchfield there?
Yes, yes.
Ah, see, the memory's bad. When I was about 10 or 12, I went, the YWCA had a camp at Titchfield, and that's where I met my oldest friend. I mean, she's not as old as I am, but we met at that camp, and we're still friends. We talk on the phone every day.
And you had a wonderful time there?
We had a great time. It was so, I can remember things I did at that camp. Can you remember? Can you imagine that? And I'm 74 years old.
Oh, yes.
So thank you for being on the show. And will you come on when we're doing Portland, please?
Oh, she will.
Okay. And if there's anything special you want me to write about Portland, just send me an email, and I'll make sure that the world knows. We have so much wonderful things about our country to celebrate. You know, a lot of times we get caught up in all the bad things that are happening, but we need to really take time and celebrate the good things about our island. Because the more energy we put into anything is the more it expands. And I want to encourage especially the younger folks to you know, you can't not necessarily have your head in the sand. Don't dwell on all the bad things. You know, we've got lots of good things going on. We've got a lot of good things that have gone on, that if we start thinking about how important these things are and what people did in the past from our country and as in all other countries, then it inspires us to be the best that we can be, and it will inspire the young generation not to necessarily fall into the mindset of all the problems, because you're only creating more problems for yourself. So that's what I'm trying to do with this platform, is to dig up all the good news and the great things about our country and our culture. So I thank you all for your support, and I hope you're enjoying all the little news and tidbits. And as I said to some of my friends who might think, not my friends, but some people who might think that the show is not as structured as they would like it to be, this is a labrish. And I'm saying, you know, don't you know what a labrish is? Come on.
Nice hearing you.
Same you to you, darling. Do you have anything else you'd like to share with us?
Not at the moment, another time.
Okay, come on when we're doing Portland now.
Okay.
I thank you for listening, dear. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Have a wonderful weekend, Miss Marshall.
Thank you very much, Sharon.
And I'm hoping all the friends that I invited next week, they won't be so shy.
Yes, I hope so. I see lots of people. So I want to thank you for inviting them, and I hope they are enjoying the lavish, and I hope they'll come back again. World-renowned bath in St. Thomas. Because they're going to get a very special healing experience.
Definitely.
So with that, I want to say thank you all and good night.
Good night.
Night.
Good night, listeners.
Bye-bye. Bye.